Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Schulter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
Well, hello, hello, loyal listeners. Thank you for lending your ears to my favorite time of the week. I just love talking about these different issues, and I have a great preoccupation, which is life coaching. And thank you so much for the feedback and for the calls. I do appreciate that. We have a very, very treasured guest here today. For just a second, I want to give you some information about my life coaching progress, and then we'll get to our special guest. As they indicated, my name is John Schulter, and as a life coach, I always have a standing offer for someone who is curious to have a hour-long, 55-minute, or it's close to that session, where we talk about you. We talk about the things that might be your aspirations, the things that kind of get in your way. But the focus is completely on you. And we can kind of figure out those kind of things together and put together a plan. Like I said before, this is my passion. You know, and after practicing law for over 40 years and dealing with people who have problems, oftentimes physical problems that are very painful and disabling. It's such a pleasure to be able to, on a different level, to talk to people who want to reconstruct their lives instead of an auto accident, that type of thing. So give me a call at 248-568-7021. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Chip St. Clair is a great, great friend. He and his wife, Lisa. He's one of the most talented guys that I know. He's the guy, you should write down his name and watch him, because he's going to make a difference during this next decade. And I'm talking about not necessarily Detroit or Michigan or the nation. He's going to make a difference concerning the world. He is founder of the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation, and I know that you're aware of it. I talk about it quite a bit, but we have a plan in which we are going to kind of divide the radio show to the activities of the foundation, which are really a moving target, and to keep you up, because there's just, I'll let Chip tell you, there's so many cutting-edge creative projects. Chip and I are in heaven, basically. So, Chip, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me, John.
Well, it's indeed a pleasure. And thank you for coming. And I wanted to take this opportunity to talk about the foundation, because I know that me being on the board of directors, it's been a process, and it's been a very interesting process that we've both learned along the way. But it is culminating into some really interesting things that are an education for me that I'd like to begin talking about, and it's something called a white paper. Could you explain to our listeners what that is?
Absolutely. And first, let me say, not only did I want to thank you for having me on the show, but obviously for the very kind introduction and for being in my life and walking this journey with me as the president of the foundation and as a great friend and mentor. Very fortunate to have you with me, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
yeah.
that.
So the white paper, you know, it's, more and more businesses are turning to these really quick, articulate ways to describe what they do. Mm-hmm. And nonprofits are no different. You know, it's just a different kind of a designation with an IRS status. But Essentially, any nonprofit has to have a sense of marketing, a sense of who their clientele is, a strategy for growth and expansion and all these good things. So you have this altruism at the bottom, you know, that's your bottom line, but also you have to be mindful of the financial side of things, or you can't serve the populations you hope to serve. So in doing a lot of research, you know, one of the things to take us to the next step in growth and expansion was to create a white paper. And essentially, it's almost like a business plan. It's a little bit like a case study, an academic case study, where it gives it presents the problem. It presents an abstract of the whatever topic you're talking about. It could be a specific topic or the organization itself or the business itself. And then it gives a set of problems with statistics and verifiable data. And then it presents a solution and shows how you can mitigate those problems with the solution and hopefully convince people to either invest in your business or invest in your nonprofit. And so that was kind of the purpose and the impetus of creating this, because we've been collecting data, you know, we've been around for 10 years now, and we've been really trying to zero in on what we do so well, how it works. I mean, you know, to give your viewers or your listeners a quick overview of what we do, we essentially help get the creative arts and literature into the lives of communities that are considered at risk. And when I say at risk, I mean where they have high risk factors of either poverty or some other kind of disenfranchisement, where there's gang violence, or there's you know, all kinds of you know, maybe there's a high crime neighborhood, exposure to drug and alcohol abuse, victims of physical, sexual, and emotional abuse or neglect, not to mention bearing witness to domestic violence or parental incarceration or caretaker mental illness. So, you know, every second of every day, there are thousands of children and teens among us who are caught up in this cycle of trauma and drama. And we've been servicing over 10,000 kids in this time. And, you know, it's one thing to say, and we're an all-volunteer organization, and we work with no paid staff and you know, great in-kind services, and we have great partnerships with schools and with community, and we rely on, you know, generous gifts and fundraisers and all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, it's how do you quantify what we do and how it works?
Well, for me, this was the last piece of the puzzle. Because we know, I'm sure there our viewers or listeners are aware of your story, that you have a horrific past of abuse, and we have programs that the kids are with the theory that art heals, but this really brings it to a new level, because it shows the direct connection, it shows the research, and it matches the research to results that this 10 years has gotten you, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's the key. It's all about what you can prove. I mean, it's one thing to say when we walk down the hallway of one of our schools that we're swamped with hugs and praise and the kids love us, and, you know, we have this great relationship. But how do you measure that? How do you quantify a hug as making a difference in a child's life? And so we had to step back a little bit and say, what are we really doing here? What are we addressing? And ultimately, it's about trauma. And so this white paper is essentially a study of it's a trauma report model. So, you know, these traumatized young people are more likely to disengage at home and turn inward, and it results in deviant and self-destructive behavior, delinquency, drug and alcohol abuse, gang violence, depression, low self-worth. And in fact, up to 70% of all the youth in a juvenile justice system have a trauma-related mental health disorder. So just to give, you know, a couple of couple of thoughts on that. The burden of child maltreatment and child trauma in the U.S. found that the lifetime total estimated financial costs associated with just 1 year, if you take all the kids in that 1 year, is approximately $124 billion. That figure doesn't even include prevention or intervention programs. It's just the price of the aftermath. And so for perspective, last year, the entire world spent $100 billion fighting cancer. And the government's response to treating and developing a cure for AIDS cost taxpayers $27 billion in 2015. So, I mean, this is something we're just, it's just mopping up the mess, spending $124 billion per year on dealing with the after effects of traumatized kids.
Well, so here's one thing that I've, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I get so excited talking about this stuff. But, you know, even past that, it seems to me that, just so that the listeners can understand, that it is based on a simple theory that, let's say that a stitch in time saves nine. That if you get something, if you put out the fire before it burns down the barn, you are going to save so much money that you're going to be able to invest more money into the kids who are achieving and already healed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing. And our solution is relatively inexpensive. I mean, we're talking about roughly $500 per child for an entire year worth of programming.
I love that.
And this is to say that high school students enrolled in at least one Butterfly Foundation program averaged a 0.8 increase in their GPA after just one semester. You know, I mean, so there are some significant results. But see, I think a lot of people, and this is the underlying thing with the way the school system is and the way the juvenile justice system is, they don't really understand the science of trauma. And if you don't mind me going.
I love that. It was a revelation for me. And we must hear what you found.
Yeah, it's just really remarkable because of the science behind it. So as humans, you know, we're designed to deal with a certain amount of temporary stress and trauma. And, you know, with the proper support and coping mechanisms, we're able to suffer loss and experience grief and face harrowing situations with negligible long-term negative effects. But in extreme and chronic trauma and stress, especially during childhood, it can result in lifelong health and psychological complications. So we've all seen those videos of, you know, from an African safari where a lion's attacking a gazelle and the gazelle first smells the lion on the prowl and her ears perk up and her nostrils flare and her muscles tense. And sensing danger, her body releases adrenaline so she has more sugar in her blood for the energy. And then her blood pressure raises and her heart rate raises so she can run faster. Her immune system kicks in so she can heal if she sustains an injury. And then all areas of her brain not associated with immediate survival all shut down and she becomes hypervigilant. Now, at the same time, cortisol is released to calm those agitated body systems. So if she survives, she can get back to a normal state. Now, in those videos, when the lion does catch the gazelle, you remember how maybe you see the eyes glaze over and she stops fighting. And that's what psychologists call the freeze response, because her brain is flooding with dopamine so she can detach from trauma. Well, children who suffer chronic abuse, neglect, bullying, screaming, fear, or regularly witness violence experience this fight, flight, or freeze response over and over and over again. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, how does this affect their developing brain? It changes it. It permanently alters their brain. Well, not permanently, it alters their brain. Because how can their brains develop normally when the parts that aren't used for immediate survival are shut down most of the time? When children are frightened or in danger or in pain, their bodies respond quickly to anything that feels threatening. So what ends up happening is it causes this constant hypervigilant state. And when these kids grow up, they're more likely to develop diabetes, high blood pressure, autoimmune diseases, and mental health disorders. And normally, I mean, unfortunately, kids who are in this constant chronic stressful situations aren't around healthy adults who can teach them coping skills. So a child experiencing chronic trauma is constantly in fight or flight mode, and the brain and the body begin to break down. In fact, if exposed to these risk factors routinely, by the time a child is 5 years old, his DNA has changed, and he's at an increased risk for disease and early death. But even more frightening, the DNA damage can be passed down from generation to generation. So it just goes to show this is a chronic, terrible, terrible problem that, but thankfully, what's amazing is the one thing that's been noted over and over again to mitigate these factors and actually reverse the damage done to the DNA and the brain is through the creative arts.
Unbelievable. And the cost of bringing these creative arts, which parenthetically, when taxes are cut, that's usually the first thing that goes, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing with a lot of these disadvantaged communities. They're already strapped for funding. I mean, we all know schools are always struggling for every dollar they can get. And, you know, to the school's defense, they're also under pressure from the state, from the district, from the school board, for test performance and all these other factors that the arts, music, yoga, all these other programs that can help with mindfulness and to help heal these things, if they're not understood as an integral part of education and growth and development for children, these dollars are wrestled away. So what's interesting is when we introduce these kinds of things, you know, we're talking about, we're addressing behavioral symptoms. When these kids have PTSD, there's three things that happen. They either have these behavioral symptoms, physical symptoms, or cognitive symptoms. And with the behavioral symptoms, you know, they will have angry outbursts or irritability, behavioral inhibition, reckless behaviors, regression. The physical symptoms, they actually have a smaller hippocampal volume in their brain. They have altered metabolisms, low basal cortisol levels, and sleep disturbances. And then cognitively, they'll have trouble concentrating in school. They have negative cognitive development and increased arousal and hypervigilance. So, you know, you have these kids in class and they're labeled the bad kids, or they're being bullied, or they're bullying, or they're getting suspended, they're getting expelled because of lack of focus or because they're acting out in class. And as I know, if there's any teachers listening, they're hearing these symptoms and they're saying, yeah, these are my kids, because these are all signs and symptoms of trauma. These aren't just happening just because. These are a real a true effect of what's happened. And, you know, in the past, what's been dealt, you know, how they've dealt with these kinds of issues and these kids is, you know, when they act out too much, they get expelled, and a lot of these kids end up in the juvenile justice system. And, you know, although the juvenile justice system was at its inception 100 years ago, it was viewed as a place for delinquent youth to get help and to, you know, keep them from being involved in more serious crimes. And they saw the brain of the young person as still developing and they needed guidance. But over the decades, and for a multitude of reasons, the juvenile justice system has strayed away from this blueprint of compassion and reform, and then has adopted policies much more aligned with in punitive nature with the adult criminal justice system. And so, you know, when kids are placed in these juvenile detention facilities, the suicide rate's 4 times higher. And they're 70 to 80% more likely to be rearrested. And, you know, the cost alone, getting back to that, because unfortunately, especially when it comes to government institutions and civil institutions, money moves people. You know, we spend almost 38,000 per year to house each juvenile offender, which is more than most higher education institutions of learning. So would we rather have them in college or keep them behind bars? So, you know, there's all kinds of things being done to treat these problems, spending, like we said, $124 billion a year, but we're not really changing the situation, which with the power of the arts, you know, in a dramatic shift, more and more experts are turning to the therapeutic creative arts and mindfulness programs as a means to healing trauma and opening doors for better coping skills.
So this is the good news. We've heard the bad news, and the good news is the exciting part, right?
It is. It is. And that's the thing. You know, with the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation, we have visual art and creative writing and yoga and music and gardening we do as well. And what's amazing is, so like we said, these arts-based mindfulness programs are relatively inexpensive, costing about $500
unbelievable.
Each year to fund for an entire year to fund the programming. Compared to the mainstream treatment or incarceration of traumatized youth. And just to illustrate, if Michigan alone just moved 20% of its young people from residential facilities into community-based art program, it could save $120,000 every day, $44 right. million dollars every year. And so, you know, having arts as a sanctuary as a child and with the mindfulness and mentorship, we know that what we're doing is going to help children find their wings. And so, you know, we've been doing this over the past 10 years. Our programs have been incorporated in the rehabilitation efforts of juvenile detention centers nationwide, from New York to Spokane, Washington. And we work with community leaders and key stakeholders to fill the gaps and the shortfalls in the school district with the partner organization. And we work with community budgets so that all students have access to the therapeutic benefits of the creative arts. And like I said, to date, we've serviced over 10,000 young people. And our cutting-edge approach is a specialized curricula in visual art, creative writing, yoga, gardening, music. And we've had some dramatic results. I mean, you talk about the good news. 100% of eighth grade participants in our program graduated to high school, while only 89% of eighth graders not enrolled in our programs did. So we had a perfect increase. I mentioned about the 0.8 increase in GPA for high school students in just one semester. And incidents of detention, suspension, and expulsion dropped by 80% last year. Our kids enrolled in our program, our absences lessened by 32%. And there was a 90% decrease in violent behavior in the schools among those students participating in at least one SCBF program. But even the school, the teachers and the school administrators observed increased self-esteem and peer relationships, confidence with self-expression, better proficiency in grammar and writing, reading comprehension, and critical thinking skills. So it's just, I don't want to say we have the silver bullet, but John, we have the silver bullet.
That's great. Now, if somebody's listening out there and they want more, they see what we see. What do they do? What are their options to try to get involved?
Yeah, so right now it's about creating partnerships with schools. It's about getting folks on board who believe in what we do. I mean, maybe they can't afford $500 a year per student, but every donation can help. It can help with the supplies. It can help with the cost of our experts that we bring in, our yoga instructors. Perhaps they could volunteer and become a part of our team. So just visiting stclairbutterflyfoundation.org or scbf.org and finding out a little bit more about how they can be involved, how to help take us to the next level. Maybe it's a connection to a corporate partnership that would open some doors. And, you know, we have a few objectives that we came up for fiscal year 2018. We're working on recruiting a director of development and a program director. We want to expand our network of key partnerships, foundation support, and major gift donors. We're trying to secure funding for sustained programming and 20% scaled growth each year for the next 3 years. And we want to implement professional development programs for staff to teach them about the traumatized population they're dealing with and better ways to to administer their classroom so that it's a positive experience for all. And of course, last but not least, we're exploring the possibility of housing our office and our programs in some sort of community center facility. So,
well, that is mind-blowing. And thank you for the, we're almost out of time, unfortunately, but like everything in the foundation, what starts things to move, and I think you'll agree with this, and what you've started here today is a conversation. We need to start that conversation and bring this information to people that you know and care about, because the cargo that we're talking about is our most precious children. And Chip and you, your efforts and Lisa's efforts are making that difference. I want to congratulate you on there. And again, thank you so much for being on the show. And if people are interested in participating any way that they can, even if they just know somebody that can be of assistance, that would be good. Wouldn't it, Chip?
It would be wonderful. And, you know, it's something that we need to work as a community to unlock these kids' potential, to re-script their future, and to literally rewrite their DNA, because we believe everybody deserves a chance to fly.
Well, and it's also true then that a village, that does take indeed a village to raise a child.
Absolutely.
Thank you again, and God bless. And thank you all listeners, keep in touch. We love your texts and emails. Just go on our website, Empower Radio, and you can hear all the back issues of the show. Thank you again. God bless.